Here's part two of the horrid talk of murder of Sylvia Likens. In the weeks prior to locking Sylvia in the family basement, Gertrude had increasingly abused and tormented Sylvia. She would occasionally falsely claim to the children in her household that either she herself or one of them had been receiving direct insults from Sylvia in the hope this would provoke them into belittling or attacking her. On one occasion, Gertrude held a knife aloft and challenged Likens to, quote, fight me back, end quote, to which Likens replied she did not know how to fight. In response, Gertrude inflicted a light scar wound to Likens' leg. Physical and mental torment such as this would occasionally pause watched their favorite television shows. Neighborhood children were also occasionally charged 5 cents apiece to see the display of Likens' body and to humiliate, be skulled, bird, and ultimately mutilate her. Throughout Likens' captivity in the basement, Gertrude frequently, with the assistance of her children and neighborhood children, restrained and gagged Likens before placing her in the bathtub filled with scalding water and proceeding to rub salt into her wounds. On one occasion, Gertrude and her 12-year-old son, John Jr., rubbed urine and feces from Gertrude's 1-year-old son's diaper into Likens' mouth before giving her a cup half filled with water, and sitting the water was all she would receive for the remainder of the day. On October 22, John Beniziski Jr. tormented Likens by offering to allow her to eat a bowl of soup with her fingers and then quickly taking away the bowl when Likens, by this stage suffering from extreme malnourishment, attempted to eat the food. Gertrude eventually allowed Likens to sleep upstairs on the condition that she learned not to wet herself. That night, Sylvia whispered to Jenny to secretly give her a glass of water before falling asleep. But the following morning, Gertrude discovered that Likens had urinated on herself. As a punishment, Likens was forced to insert an empty glass Coca-Cola bottle into her vagina in the presence of the Beniziski children before Gertrude ordered her into the basement. Shortly thereafter, Gertrude shouted for Likens to return to the kitchen, then ordered her to strip naked before proclaiming to her, quote, "You have branded my daughters, now I am going to brand you," end quote. She began carving the words, quote, "I am a prostitute and proud of it," end quote, onto Likens' abandoned with a heated needle. Here's a quote from Richard Hobbs testifying as to Gertrude's decision to carve an insult onto Likens' abandoned on October 23, 1965. Quote, "Gertrude called Sylvia upstairs to the kitchen. Somehow the conversation got around to tattooing. Gertrude asked Sylvia whether she knew what a tattoo was. She said, 'You branded my children, so now I'm going to brand you,'" end quote. When Gertrude was unable to finish the branding, she instructed one of the neighborhood children present, 14-year-old Richard Dean Hobbs, to finish etching the words into Likens' flesh as she took Jenny to a nearby grocery store. In what Hobbs would later insist were short, light etchings, he continued to brand the text into Likens' abandoned as she clenched her teeth and moaned. Both Hobbs and 10-year-old Shirley Beniziski then led Likens into the basement, where each proceeded to use an anchor bolt in an attempt to burn the letter S beneath Likens' left breast, although they apply one section of the loop backwards, and this deep burn scar would resemble the number 3. I'm not sure what the S mean. I'm not sure. I really don't know. Gertrude later taunted Likens by claiming she would never be able to marry due to the wounds carved on her stomach, stating, quote, "Sylvia, what are you going to do now? You can't get married now. What are you going to do?" end quote. Weeping, Likens replied, quote, I guess there is nothing I can do," end quote. Later that day, Likens was forced to display the carving to neighborhood children, with Gertrude claiming she had received the inscription at a sex party. Shit, that's crazy. That night, Sylvia confided to her sister Jenny, quote, quote, Jenny, I know you don't want me to die, but I'm going to die, I can tell it, end quote. The following day, Gertrude woke Likens to force her to write a letter as she dictated the contents, which were intended to mislead her parents into believing their daughter had run away from the Benesisque residence. The content of this letter was intended to frame a group of anonymous local boys for extensively abusing and mutilating Likens after she had initially agreed to engage in sexual relations with them before they inflicted the extreme abuse and torture upon her body. After Likens had written this letter, Gertrude finished formulating her plan to have John Jr. and Jenny blindfold Sylvia, then take her to a nearby wooded area known as Jimmy's Forest and leave her there to die. After she had finished writing the letter, Likens was then again tied to the stair railing and offered crackers to eat, although she refused them, saying, quote, give it to the dog, I don't want it, end quote. In response, Gertrude forced the crackers into Likens' mouth before she and John beat her, particularly around the stomach. Between October 25 and 26. So, on October 25, Likens attempted to escape from the basement after overhearing a conversation between Gertrude and John Jr. pertaining to the family's plan to abandon her to die. She attempted to flee to the front door. However, due to her extensive injuries and general weakness, Gertrude caught her before she could escape the property. Likens was then given crackers to eat but was unable to consume the food due to her extreme state of dehydration. Gertrude forced the crackers into her mouth before repeatedly striking her face with the curtain rod until sections of the instrument were bent into right angles. Coley Hubbard then took the curtain rod from Gertrude and struck Likens one further time, rendering her unconscious. Gertrude then dragged Likens into the basement. That evening, Sylvia desperately attempted to alert neighbors by screaming for help and hitting the walls of the basement with a spade. One immediate neighbor of the Benesisque would later inform police she had heard the desperate commotion that she had identified the source as emanating from the basement at 3850 East New York Street, but that as the noise had suddenly ceased at approximately 3 a.m., she decided not to inform police about the disturbance. That means a death. So, by the morning of October 26, Sylvia was unable to either speak intelligibly or correctly coordinate the movement of her limbs. Gertrude moved Sylvia into the kitchen and, having propped her back against the wall, attempted to feed her a donut and a glass of milk. She threw Sylvia to the floor in frustration when Sylvia was unable to correctly move the glass of milk to her lips. She was then returned to the basement. Shortly thereafter, Sylvia became delirious, repeatedly moaning and mumbling. When Paula asked her to recite the English alphabet, Sylvia was unable to recite anything beyond the first four letters or to raise herself off the ground. In response, Paula verbally threatened her to either stand up or she would inflict a long jump upon her. A long jump? It's a trade and field event in which athletes combine speed, strength, and agility in an attempt to leap as far as possible from a takeoff point. So, yeah, that's what that meant. Gertrude then ordered Sylvia, who had defected, to clean herself. That afternoon, several of Sylvia's other tormentors gathered in the basement. Sylvia jerkingly moved her arms in an apparent attempt to point at her face at the faces of the tormentors she could recognize, making statements such as, quote, you're Ricky and you're Gertie, end quote, before Gertrude tersely shouted, quote, shut up, you know who I am, end quote. Minutes later, Sylvia unsuccessfully attempted to bite into a rotten pear she had been given to eat, stating she could feel the looseness in her teeth. Upon hearing this, Jenny replied, quote, don't you remember it, Sylvia? Your front tooth was knocked out when you were 7, end quote. Jenny then left Sylvia in the basement to perform gardening chores for neighbors in the hope of earning spending money. In an attempt to wash Sylvia, a laughing John Jr. sprayed her with a garden hose brought to the house that afternoon by Randy Leper at Gertrude's request. Sylvia again desperately attempted to exit the basement but collapsed before she could reach the stairs. In response to this effort, Gertrude stamped upon Sylvia's head before standing and staring at her for several moments. Shortly before, after 5:30 p.m., Richard returned to the Bedeziskovy residence and immediately proceeded to the basement. He slipped on the wet basement stairs and fell heavily to the floor of the basement to be confronted with the sight of Stephanie crying and cuddling Sylvia's emaciated and lacerated body after she had been ordered by her mother to clean Sylvia. Stephanie and Richard then decided to give Sylvia a warm, soapy bath and dressed her in new clothes. They then laid her upon a mattress in one of the bedrooms as Sylvia muttered her final wish that her, quote, daddy was here, end quote, and that Stephanie would take her home. Stephanie then turned to her younger sister, Shirley, exclaiming, quote, oh, she'll be all right, end quote. When Stephanie realized that Sylvia was not breathing, she attempted to apply mouth-to-mouth respiration as Gertrude repeatedly shouted to the children in the house that Sylvia was faking her death. Sylvia was 16 years old when she finally succumbed to her injuries. So, yeah. That was her final words, which is crazy. And also, and she also had her final moments with her sister Jenny. Now the arrest, Gertrude initially beat Sylvia's corpse with a book, shouting, quote, faker, faker, end quote, in order to arouse her. However, she soon panicked and instructed Richard to call the police from a nearby payphone. When police arrived at her address at approximately 6:30 p.m., Gertrude led the officers to Sylvia's emaciated, extensively bludgeoned, and mutilated body lying upon a soiled mattress in the bedroom. Before handing them the letter she had forced Sylvia to write previously by her dictation, she also claimed she had been doctoring the child for an hour or more prior to her death, having applied rubbing alcohol to Sylvia's wounds in a futile attempt at first aid before she had died. She added that Sylvia had earlier run away from her home with several teenage boys before returning to her house earlier that afternoon, bare-breasted and clutching the notes. Clutching a Bible, Paula having stated to all present in the household that Sylvia's death was, quote, meant to happen, end quote, then glanced in Jenny's direction and calmly stated, quote, if you want to live with us, Jenny, we'll treat you like our own sister, end quote. Oh, hell no. As previously instructed by Gertrude, Jenny recited the rehearsed version of event, instructed by Gertrude, Jenny recited the rehearsed version of events leading to Sylvia's death to police before whispering to the officers, quote, you get me out of here and I'll tell you everything, end quote. Thank God. The formal statements provided by Jenny prompted officers to arrest Gertrude, Paula, Stephanie, and John Jr. on suspicion of Sylvia's murder within hours of the discovery of her body. The same day, Coy Hubbard and Richard Hobbs were also arrested and charged with the same offenses. The three eldest Bedeziskovy children plus Coy were placed in the custody of a nearby juvenile detention center. The younger Bedeziskovy children and Richard were detained at the Indianapolis Children's Guardian's home. All were held without bail pending trial. Initially, Gertrude denied any involvement in Likens' death, although by October 27, she had confessed to having known the kids, particularly her daughter Paula and Coy, had physically and emotionally abused Likens, stating, quote, Paula did most of the damage and Coy Hubbard did a lot of the beating, end quote. Gertrude further admitted to having forced a girl to sleep in the basement on approximately three occasions when she had wet the bed. She became evasive when one officer stated the likely reasons Sylvia had become incontinent were her mental distress and injury to her kidneys, obviously. Lacking any remorse because she's a bitch, honestly, and thank God she's resting in hell, Paula signed a statement admitting to having repeatedly beaten Sylvia about the backside with her mother's police belt, once breaking her wrist on Sylvia's jaw and inflicting other acts of brutality, including pushing her down the stairs into the basement, quote, 2 or 3 times, end quote, and inflicting a black eye. John Jr. admitted to having spanked Sylvia on one occasion, adding that, quote, most of the time I use my fists, end quote, to abuse her. He admitted to having burned Sylvia with matches on several occasions, adding that his mother had repeatedly burned a child with cigarettes. Five other neighborhood children who had participated in Sylvia's abuse: Michael Monroe, Randy Lepper, Darlene McGuire, Judy Duke, and Anna Sisko, who had also been arrested by October 29. All were charged with causing injury to person, and each was subsequently released into the custody of their parents and under subpoena to appear as witnesses at the upcoming trial. Autopsy, which is really fucking serious, sick. The autopsy of Sylvia's body revealed she has suffered in excess of 150 separate wounds across her entire body, in addition to being extremely emaciated at the time of her death. The wounds themselves varied in location, nature, severity, and the stage of healing. Her injuries included burns, severe bruising, and extensive muscle and nerve damage. Her vaginal cavity was almost swollen shut. Moreover, all of Sylvia's fingernails were broken backwards, and most of the external layers of skin upon the child's face, breast, neck, and right knee had peeled or receded. And her death throws, Sylvia had evidently bitten through her lips, partially severing sections of them from her face. The official cause of Sylvia's death was listed by coroner Dr. Arthur Kebble as a subdural hematoma due to her receiving a severe blow to her right temple. Both the shock she had primarily suffered due to the severe and prolonged damage inflicted to her skin and subcutaneous tissues, plus the severe malnutrition, were listed as contributory factors to her death. Rigor mortis had fully developed at the time of the discovery of her body, indicating Sylvia may have been deceased for up to 8 hours before she was found. Although Dr. Cabell did note Sylvia had been recently bathed, possibly after death, and that this act could have hastened the loss of body temperature and thus sped the onset of rigor mortis. So it was like... The funeral service for Sylvia was conducted at the Russell and Hitch Funeral Home in Lebanon on the afternoon of October 29. The service was officiated by the Reverend Lewis Gibson, with more than 100 mourners in attendance. Sylvia's gray casket remained open throughout the ceremony, with a portrait of her taken prior to July 1965 adorning her coffin, basically meaning of how she looked before she was killed. In his eulogy, the Reverend Gibson stated, quote, "We all have our time of passing, but we won't suffer like our little sister suffered during the last days of her life, end quote. The Reverend Gibson then strolled towards Sylvia's casket before adding, quote, "She has gone to eternity," end quote. Following the service, Sylvia's casket was placed by pallbearers in the hearse and driven to the Oak Hill Cemetery to be interred. This hearse was one of a 14-vehicle procession to drive to the cemetery for Sylvia's burial. Her headstone is inscribed with the words, quote, "Our darling daughter," end quote. Now the indictments, finally. Here is a quote of the section of Paula's psychiatric evaluation detailing her indifference to Sylvia's mistreatments that happened on February 1966. Quote, "Paula represented the situation as one in which the girl Sylvia had become quite withdrawn and negativistic in her behavior to the extent that she refused to eat and showed no response to pain," end quote. On December 30, 1965, the Marion County Grand Jury returned first-degree murder indictments against Gertrude and two of her three oldest children, Paula and John Jr. Also indicted were Richard Hobbs and Coy Hubbard. All were charged with having repeatedly struck, beaten, kicked, and otherwise inflicting a culmination of fatal injuries to Sylvia with premeditated malice. 3 weeks prior to the filing of the indictments against the five defendants, Stephanie had been released from custody upon a writ of habeas corpus bond, with her attorney successfully contending the state had insufficient evidence to support any murder or culmination of fatal injuries charges against her. Stephanie waived her immunity from any potential impending prosecution while agreeing to testify against her family and any other individuals charged with abusing and murdering Sylvia. Habeas corpus, it's like a recourse challenging the reasons or conditions of a person's confinement under a color of law. At a formal pretrial hearing held on March 16, 1966, several psychiatrists testified before Judge Saul Isaac Rabb as to their conclusions regarding psychiatric evaluations they had conducted upon three individuals indicted upon Sylvia's murder. These experts testified that all three were mentally competent to stand trial. Now the trial. The trial of Gertrude, her children Paula and John, Richard Hobbs, and Coy Hubbard began on April 18, 1966. All were tried together before Judge Rabb at Indianapolis City County Building. Initial jury selection began on this date and continued for several days. The prosecution consisted of Leroy K. New and Marjorie Wessner, who announced their intention to seek the death penalty for all five defendants on April 16. They also successfully argued before Judge Rabb that all the defendants should be tried together, as they were ultimately charged with acting, quote, in concert, end quote, in their collective crimes against Sylvia, and that as such, if each were tried separately, neither judge nor jury could hear testimony relating to a, quote, total picture, end quote, of the accumulation of offenses committed. Each prospective juror was questioned by counsels for both prosecution and defense in relation to their opinions regarding capital punishment being a just penalty for first-degree murder, and whether a mother was actually responsible for the, quote, department of her children, end quote. Jurors who expressed any opposition to the death penalty were excused from duty by Leroy New. Any who either worked with children and expressed prejudice against an insanity defense or repulsion regarding the actual horrific nature of Sylvia's death were excused by defense counsels. Gertrude was defended by William Erbecker. Her daughter Paula was defended by George Rice. Richard was defended by James G. Nender. John Jr. and Coy Hubbard were defended by Forrest Bowman. The attorneys for Richard, Coy, Paula, and John Jr. claim they had been pressured into participating in Sylvia's torment, abuse, and torture by Gertrude. Gertrude herself pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. I wish she was a motherfucker, bitch. Now the testimony. One of the first witnesses to testify on behalf of the prosecution was Deputy Coroner Charles Ellis, who testified on April 29 as to the intense pain Sylvia had suffered, stating that her fingernails were broken backwards, numerous deep cuts and punctures covered much of her body, and that her lips were, quote, essentially in shreds, end quote, due to her having repeatedly bitten and chewed upon them. Alice further testified that Sylvia had been in an acute state of shock for between 2 and 3 days prior to her death, and that Sylvia may have been in too advanced a state of shock to offer much resistance and to any form of subjective treatment in her final hours. Although he emphasized that aside from the extensive swelling inside and around her genitals, Sylvia's body bore no evidence of direct sexual molestation. On May 2 and May On May 2 and 3, Jenny testified against all five defendants, stating that each had repeatedly and extensively, both physically and emotionally, abused her sister, adding that Sylvia had done nothing to provoke the assaults and that there had been no truth in either the rumors she had been falsely accused or spreading or the slurs each had made against Sylvia's character. During her testimony, Jenny stated the abuse her sister and, to a much lesser degree, she herself had endured began approximately 2 weeks after they had begun to live in the Beniziski household, and that as the abuse her sister was forced to endure escalated, Sylvia had occasionally been unable to produce tears due to her acute state of dehydration. Jenny burst into tears as she recalled how just days before Sylvia died, she had said to her, quote, "Jenny, I know you don't want me to die, but I am going to die. I can tell it," end quotes. Sections of Jenny's testimony were later corroborated by that of Randy Lepper, who stated he had once witnessed Sylvia crying, but that she had shed no actual tears. Lepper also testified to having witnessed Stephanie strike Sylvia real hard after her mother had ordered her to remove her clothes in his presence. He then visibly smirked as he confessed to having himself beaten Sylvia on anywhere between 10 and 14 separate instances. On May 10, a Baptist minister named Roy Julian testified to having known a teenage girl was being abused in the Beniziski household, although he had failed to report this information to authorities as having been informed by Gertrude that Sylvia had, quote, made advances to men for money, end quote. He had believed the girl was being punished for selecting. The same day, 13-year-old Judy Duke also testified, admitting to having witnessed Sylvia once endure salt being rubbed into sores upon her legs until she screamed. Duke also testified to one occasion where she witnessed 10-year-old Shirley rip open Sylvia's blouse, to which Richard had made the casual remark, quote, "Everybody is having fun with Sylvia," end quote. Okay, how about you can go to hell too, motherfucker. The following day, Gertrude testified in her own defense. She denied any responsibility for Sylvia's prolonged abuse, torment, and ultimate death, claiming her children and other children within her neighborhood must have committed the acts within her home, which she described as being, quote, "such a madhouse," end quote. She also added that she had been too preoccupied with her own ill health and depression to control her children. Who gives a shit about your depression, bitch? Seriously, you asshole. God, you freaking idiot. Thank God you're dead, literally. In response to questioning relating to whether she had physically abused the Lakin sisters, Gertrude claimed that although she had, quote, "started to spank," end quotes, Lakin's on one occasion, she was emotionally unable to finish doing so and had not hit the child on any further occasions. She denied any knowledge of Lakin's having ever endured any beating, scalding, branding, or burning within her home. 2 days later, Richard testified in his own defense, describing how Gertrude had called Sylvia to the kitchen on October 23 and stated to her, quote, "You have branded my children, so now I am going to brand you," end quote. Hobbs testified Gertrude had begun etching the insults into Likens' abandon before asking him to finish the task. Although Hobbs testified this act of branding had brought blood to the surface of Sylvia's flesh and that Sylvia had begged him to stop, he remained adamant the section of branding he had inflicted had been light. Hobbs further testified that he had initially believed Sylvia would not be at the Beniziski household on October 26th, as Gertrude had informed him she intended to get rid of Sylvia the day prior. He further stated that after Sylvia's death, he had simply returned home to watch, quote, "the rest of the Lloyd Thackton show," end quotes. I'm gonna do part 3 1 second.